Okay, it's 9:45 in the morning. I was going to do today's episode 30 podcast from my porch with the Khalifa Farms coffee that I bought in episode 29 as I was leaving the Whole Foods. Just in case anyone is trying to track my movements, I was at the Whole Foods where I purchased the Khalifa Farms. Now I'm driving in my car to a McDonald's. My son is, he said he didn't want pancakes this morning. Now listen, Saturdays in the W house, in case you didn't know, that's HW. W is my last name. I'm just kidding. He said what he wanted for breakfast, and he said a Pop-Tart. Okay, well, we sent him downstairs to have a Pop-Tart. Now, the kids normally are not allowed to have Pop-Tarts on school day, school mornings. We just think it's too much sugar, and it gets them all riled up, and they start going all crazy. And we've talked about the Montessori school they go to, where in general classrooms are quite quiet. They need to focus independently on their work, yada yada. And so we just didn't feel it was really a good idea to have a, whoa, there's like a big festival going on at the movie theater. Wowee. Something big going on over there. Oh, it's that car show. I've been meaning to go to that. Those of you who watch the podcast know I'm a big fan of cars. Just kidding. I'm actually not much of a gearhead at all. Anyway, so I'm out here at McDonald's. And because my son this morning was like, I don't want anything. He wanted some Pop-Tarts. And I sent him downstairs. And it turns out that he wanted these Pop-Tarts. But he gave his to his brother. I'm really still not sure what happened. But all in all, I think there was some act of generosity that involved him not having, one of these Pop-Tarts. But and I'm about to order. That's why I'm getting real quiet here.
How may I help you?
Yeah, can I get two orders of hotcakes and sausage?
What else for you?
That's all for me.
Okay, $8.67.
Thank you. Okay, I got to stay on track here. I've been distracted by a car show, and I'm ordering pancakes. I'm not really sure what happened, but somehow his little brother ended up eating the Pop-Tarts because there was one left, but there wasn't one left, but they were under the impression there was one left. So he ate a Fig bar, and at first he was happy with that, but then later he started saying, that's not fair, I didn't get what I wanted. And then he said, no, I didn't want any more Pop-Tarts, I wanted something else. So he said, what do you want? So he started saying, I wanted pancakes. So I said, listen, your little friends are coming over in an hour, so if you want pancakes, I'm going to go get them right now. And, there's not going to be any more talking about food we don't have here, okay? This is the last chance. Do you or do you not want pancakes? Well, he said yes. So I'm out here buying pancakes, and here I am. I just ordered the pancakes. Kids are crazy, you know what I'm saying? They lack... It's not that my son is inconsiderate. It's not that we told him, here, have a Pop-Tart, and then he decided not to have a Pop-Tart. He tried to do something generous. I mean, for him, this is a relatively new term, generosity. I mean, he's 5 years old. He's only been able to be generous for like 3 years. So, I don't know, kind of a weird thing there. Thank you very much. So, yeah, a five-year-old, and in the course of his life, maybe half of the time, he's been able to... Thank you very much, you too. He's been able to be generous. You know what I'm saying? Now we're pulling up on this lady. She's going to give me the pancake. She always thinks I speak Spanish, and I don't. So I always say, muchas gracias, señora. I don't really. That would be patronizing. But anyway, it's not that he really even changed his mind. It's that it's just so much stuff coming at him. I mean, think about it. With all the thoughts of Mario and Pokemon and Nintendo Switch he has to juggle, I'm amazed he can even tell me what he wants for breakfast at all. That's sarcasm. But nonetheless, they're not ridiculous. I don't think kids are ridiculous, even though they do a lot of ridiculous things. It's easy to perceive them as ridiculous. But you know who is ridiculous? Grown-ups. Grown-ups are the ones who are really ridiculous.
Hello, how
are
you doing?
Hey, very good. How are you?
What did you order?
Just two hotcakes and sausage.
You ordered the hotcakes and sausage?
That's me.
Do you have anything else for your order?
No, just that.
Let me check if
they have
two hotcakes.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Have a good day. So it's the grown-ups who are crazy. And let me tell you why. And let me tell you why I'm glad I left California. If you're a Californian or you're pro-California, this is not going to be the podcast for you. It's really not. You're not going to enjoy this. My dad came and visited me, and he told me that my nephew, who's in a public school in California, in Northern California, they're not allowed to play. Well, they were playing flag football at PE. And then my nephew Frankie was quite upset because they weren't allowed to play football anymore, which he was getting into football, and he started watching football, and he kind of was becoming a football fan. And then they said, you're not allowed to play football anymore. So now he's just back to mostly playing his iPad, which isn't that what we all want for kids, right? When they get a taste for sports, physical athletics, team sports, we want to tell them, no. We have some agenda why you can't play football anymore. And they took the ability to play football away. Now, I don't know about you, but as a parent, I'm very concerned with the things I've been seeing about football. You're going to get a science lesson here on the Tone JV podcast today. I personally will tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I am not a big football fan. I do like some sports, but football's just not one I've ever really gone into. I'm a bandwagon fan, so like when the Niners were good, I was a bandwagon fan. But convenient for me, that's been like not at all during my lifetime, or at least my kind of adult lifetime. And if my kids came to me tomorrow and said, "Dad, my dream in life is to be a football player," I would. It's one of the very few things they could tell me their dream is, and I probably would not support them. Now you're going, come on, what, HW, you don't like football? If you've been keeping up with the stuff happening with brain injury and what they're discovering, basically, there's a ton of studies going on right now that have all been sparked by this one study. But this one study showed some things that were really alarming. Now, we all know that we broke this thing, some news media broke this thing. The NFL's been covering up the amount of brain injury. We all know about Chris Benoit, the professional wrestler who had these brain injuries from repeated concussions, ended up going crazy and killing his whole family and himself. Junior Seau, we lost to suicide. It's all very sad. It's very sad and it's very alarming because it looks like we don't know the extent of brain injury that can happen. And what researchers have been finding out, they've been studying Mick Foley, who is, if you don't know Mick Foley, professional wrestler, went by the name Mankind, Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, Dude Love, all sorts of people. He is currently today the most advanced case of brain injury ever recorded. And they are getting all sorts of images of his brain, studying his brain, because he's one of the most brain-damaged people on the planet. Now, I don't mean from a severe accident where part of his brain doesn't work. Mick Foley is a unique case because most people, even in professional football, do not endure the amount of concussions and subconcussive hits that Mick Foley has in his something like 28-year wrestling career. They asked him, "How many times have you had a concussion?" He said, "Oh, I don't know. Maybe about I can't remember." And they said, "Well, how many times? Okay, if you can't remember concussions, how many times have you seen stars?" He said to them, "Isn't that a concussion?" They said, "Oh, no. A concussion's worse. How many times have you seen stars?" And he went, "Oh gosh, thousands of times. I mean, like nightly for years." Here's what's alarming about the recent studies coming out. There now was a study, because some of the critics of this were saying, well, look, you're only studying people who are coming forward. You're only studying NFL athletes. Of course, you're going to find higher correlations of brain injury. These are guys who played a long time and are now complaining of symptoms. So you don't have, this is a self-selecting group. Well, so they did a study now that included no NFL athletes. It only included people who played for two or more years in high school and possibly through college. And here's what they found. They found, and I'm paraphrasing here because I read about this. I'm paraphrasing, but here's what they found. They found that basically if you played 2 years of high school football or more, they found evidence of this brain disease stemming from brain injury. Now, you might think, well, what about padding and safety for the kids and everything? No. they now believe concussions are not the real culprit here. See, concussions are when you get a big injury and your body like responds and goes, hey, you're literally killing me here, Smalls. All right? Your brain is like, oh, snap, you're damaging your brain. Stop that. Stop. Like, I can't even, like, you're seeing stars because I've just got concussed. Hi, I'm your brain talking. I can't even communicate with your eyeballs for a moment. That's why you're seeing stars. I, like, lost the connection to your eyeballs. Now, that's very alarming. But now what they're saying is, no, it's not concussions. They're not the real thing. You go ahead and get concussed 100 times. That's not good for you. But the real problem is the subconcussive hits, the hits that don't result in a concussion, that just jar you a little bit, that you don't even realize hurt you. Do 1,000 of those. It's a lot worse than 100 concussions. And they're saying now that if you played football for 2 years, they're finding evidence of basically in all these kids who played football for 2 years or more, that they have impaired cognitive states. Now listen, they don't know they have impaired cognitive states. Their cognitive state is normal to them because they're a growing brain at 16, at 15, at 18, whenever they get involved in football. And then they go play for 2 years and they think this is normal. But what they're actually trying to figure out is, well, compared to your peers, what is your cognitive function? And what they're finding is it's actually impaired. It's slowed down. Now, this is only people who played that much. They're now trying to not focus because of the criticism on people who played for 8 years, 10 years, through maybe Pop Warner, into high school, into college. But dude, their idea is if you did that, you have brain damage and you have a brain disease. And this is like no laughing matter. It's like serious stuff. So I got to tell you, if my kid said, I want to be the most famous magician in the world, I'd be like, yeah, bro, do it. Let's do it. Let's get you in some magic school. I'm going to send you to magic camp. If he said, Dad, I want to be the president of the United States, I'd be like, yeah, bro, let's get you double talking people. Let's get you using Twitter ASAP. That wasn't a knock on Trump. That was the Twitter thing was about Trump, but the double talking was just about everybody. You know, if he said something crazy like, Dad, I want to be the greatest interpretive dance juggler, who also serves coffee by day. That would make me really happy. I love dealing with people, and at night I want to have this performing arts thing that I know probably won't make me a lot of money, so I want to do something more with people. I want to be a barista also. I'd be like, bro, as long as you're happy, man, that's what this world is about. The world is about, a man can do no greater thing than enjoy his work under the sun. This is what Solomon talked about. He's talking about happiness. Now, you might say there's no greater thing under the sun. What does that mean? You can't do greater, there's no greater things than just being happy? Doesn't that sound selfish? Well, nobody who's unfulfilled, nobody who's depressed, nobody who's in a state of anxiety and depression, nobody who is beaten down because they're just unhappy ever really does anything great for other people. So there is an element to life where you kind of have to examine yourself first and go, what do I want out of life? Like, what am I really going to be unhappy if I don't do? What was instilled in me as a child that I can't shake and now is going to determine my outlook? And I either got to work through it or I've got to achieve those things. Okay, we're getting way off track here. Here's the thing. I understand that they don't want my nephew to play football if they said, look, until we understand what we're doing to kids' brains, we're not putting a 10-year-old in pads. Now, I get that. Now, if you let your kid play football, I ain't mad at you. I'm not saying anything. Honestly, the jury's still out because there could be some studies that come now from this. Because to have a scientific consensus, you need to have multiple studies which are able to reproduce findings independently of each other. Meaning, when we apply the scientific method and do a study, we're finding the same thing. So right now, there's just some studies that are saying, hey, this seems very alarming. And there's a lot more studies being conducted now, but we need studies conducted over years and that are taking large sample sizes, not just self-selecting people and stuff. So this could all be a total red herring. This could all turn out that, no, you know what? Actually, as long as we employ this type of concussion protocol, and as long as we, you know, employ this type of thing where in football we make it illegal to tackle a guy when his arms are up or something like that, you know, which they've done and stuff. As long as we do these things, actually, kids are very safe. And so that could be. But until we know that, I'm saying, sorry, dudes, you're out. But that's not why they don't want my son or my nephew to play tag. See, because they were playing touch football. And that is the concern now. They don't want the kids touching each other in California. And so they also decided tag is illegal. You can't play tag. So the kids are being told you're no longer allowed to play tag. Not just, by the way, now it's not just... Not just among boys and girls. Not just, you know, like this intersex game of tag. No, no, no. They won't even let the boys play tag by themselves. They won't let the boys play football. They won't let the girls play football. They won't let the girls play tag. So they've told the kids the only thing you can do... Well, what can they do? So they had to give the kids games. So they said... They came up with like a list of games. You can play hopscotch. You can race each other as long as it doesn't involve contact, meaning you can start at a starting line and see who's faster. You can race each other. You can play. They said you could play the game telephone as long as you didn't touch the other person. The game of telephone. Okay. So right now we're a little bit hurting for physical activity. I guess all our kids are going to be sprinters. They said you could walk and talk together. And they said you could play kickball. As long as you didn't touch each other, and you could play dodgeball. You can do everything but touch another child in a game of sports. I don't know what they're doing about basketball. I don't know what they're going to do. Like, basketball involves physical contact. Football, I don't know that they had football in his district anyway. I think there's a Pop Warner League, but it's outside the school system. I don't know what they're going to do. They're so hypersensitive right now to a lawsuit and to sexual misconduct, even among children. They don't want kids touching each other. Now, listen, I gotta say, I'm not usually going to weigh in politically here, but this is my question. Are the kids supervised or are they not on a playground? Okay, so if they're supervised on the playground, I think it would be weird if an adult showed up and was like, I want to play tag with some kids. It'd be like, who's this neighborhood adult? Get them off the playground. But I really have a hard time thinking that 7- and 8-year-olds can't be supervised in a game of tag, and that supervision result in a reasonable assurance that no one will be sexually assaulted. Could someone be touched on the shoulder, on the back, on the lower back? I suppose that could happen. Could someone be touched on the buttocks and a child feel like, hey, why did they touch me? That could happen. And I think at that point, maybe you just talk to the kid and say, hey, I don't know if that was an accident or not, but you can't. That's not part of tag. Like, maybe it was an accident. If it was an accident, don't do it again. If it was on purpose, don't do it again. And if the kid does it again, maybe then you go, hey, we don't want you. I don't know. I just think it's a little draconian. It's a little strong arm to just say, hey, 7- and 8-year-olds, you can't play tag. I don't know about you, but when I played tag, I mean, I felt like you're usually running away from someone. You're usually being touched on the shoulder, arm, or back. But they don't want kids touching each other. I don't know what they're going to do in soccer. It involves contact. I don't know what they're going to do in anything. I don't know what they're going to do in anything. And it's concerning because... It's crazy. Is it not crazy? That's crazy, right? Look, I'm all for like Harvey Weinstein going down. I don't think men in positions of power should be able to abuse them, especially habitually over decades. So when you have a guy like Harvey Weinstein, he's a matchmaker with studios and actors and actresses. His job is to take people and put them in front of the right people. So he's both being relied on by his peers who have a lot of power in Hollywood, who have his, who take his recommendations seriously, and by people who are not his peers, who would love for Harvey Weinstein to just say, this person has it. They're the next Nicole Kidman. You know what I mean? Like, they're the next Tom Cruise. They're the next Brad Pitt. Like, this is George Clooney. This is the best, the next Daniel Day-Lewis, the next Johnny Depp or Daniel Day-Lewis, the next best method actor in the world. Because if he said that about you, it would make your career. For him to take the idea that he knows this, that he has persuasive power over people, and to apply it over people he'd like to harm, I mean, it's disgusting. It's really not good. It's really terrible. But I gotta tell you, I don't see how that, or how all of the allegations we're hearing against people right now, Bill Cosby and stuff. Not allegations, Bill Cosby was convicted. I can't see how that is related to kids not being able to play tag. Because my real fear here, this is as serious as I'm ever going to get on the podcast. My real fear here is when you tell kids you're not allowed to play tag because someone could touch you. It means they don't know what kind of touch is threatening and what kind of touch is just kids playing amongst each other. Like literally someone just, their body contacted mine in the course of a game of physical activity. I'm afraid that these kids are going to go play basketball and then be like, you know, I was playing basketball and in the third quarter I was sexually assaulted. And it being like, wait, what? There was a referee out there. Yeah, I felt like that guy was really like that center, he was really playing an aggressive game. And I feel that he assaulted me. Maybe not even sexually. I feel like assault and battery. I feel assaulted. I feel he was like threatening me with his aggressive playing and I feel unsafe. I don't know what to do when what do you say to that kid who's saying, I feel unsafe on a basketball court, which I think is kind of ridiculous in itself. But I actually think that kid is right. If you spent his whole childhood telling him that you can't play tag because someone could touch you. I don't know how he goes on and plays team sports ever. I don't know how he goes through life. God help him if he ever visits China or India or Japan or something and people are literally bumping into him on the street and they're not saying excuse me, because to them, there's so many people around bumping people and coming into physical contact with people. It's not something that's avoidable. I don't know what you do then. I don't know what happens when a full-grown man sitting in an airplane seat has more physical contact with the person next to him, just shoulder to shoulder. There's almost no way you can not touch in these airplane seats. I'm 6'2". There's no way I can't not touch a guy next to me. Our elbows are going to touch periodically throughout the flight. I don't know how we tell a kid that that is just flying on an airplane, but that amount of physical contact in a game of tag is somehow inappropriate. I'm not getting political. I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I'm just saying it seems crazy the kids can't play tag or that this district has done this. I know I'm not experiencing that where I am, so it seems it's not all over the planet or something. I'm not going to get... But it seems a little silly. It seems more silly than me having to go get pancakes, which I'm back in my house now, so I'm going to go give my kids these pancakes, maybe enjoy some pancakes myself if they don't eat all of them, although I only got two. They'll probably want all of them because they're not greedy. They just have small little stomachs that seem to have a never-ending pit on the bottom, and they will eat us out of house and home. That is my prediction. I will one day come home, and there will be no house here, and my wife will say, it happened. Today was the day. I've been saying it all these years. They're going to eat us out of house and home. And I'm not sure what the particulars on that situation will be, but one day my house will just not be here. And they'll be like, this was the day they ate us out of house and home. I've been HW. Let's get on to some more guitar-related topics, shall we? Okay, I said we weren't going to get too political, and yet I'm doing this on Election Day, and this podcast is coming out on Election Day. And so we're going to talk about elections. That's not a guitar, in case. It's not a new boutique guitar company, in case you were wondering. No, it's the act of going to vote. And it's not going to be a political podcast, but I would like to share with you some thoughts on elections and some of the things I observe, having lived in California for almost 30 years and now moving to a much different place in the Nashville area. I'll tell you, there's a lot of races going on nationwide, but the one I'm most excited for is the one at my youngest son's school, his preschool, Promised Land Preschool in Brentwood, Tennessee. They're voting today to determine cat or dog, who wins. And so they go and they actually choose little red or blue fuzzy balls, and they put them into one container or the other, both with pictures of animals draped in American flags or in American flag hats. But basically, it's cat versus dog. Now, I'll tell you, My older son went to this preschool, and this is my younger son's second year in this preschool. All in all, our family's been sending kids to this preschool for 3 years. It's been dog every time. Is this Cat's year? I hope not, because I find Cat's policies just appalling. What, with the mandatory meowing, with the the new regulations around short naps during the day. They want to lift all bans on sitting on keyboards. I mean, Cat's policies will just wreck this country. Oops, I'm sorry. I was just falling into the normal political rhetoric where people just exaggerate way too much about everything. I'm hearing a lot of people say this is the most important election ever. Not by a long shot is this the most important election of your lifetime. In fact, I can't help but notice I'm 32. I've heard this about every single election I've ever voted in. Every vote right now is the most important. Everything is so dire. Everything is so urgent. Are we ever going to have an election where people go, you know, actually, not that much is going to change no matter what happens today? I don't think we will, because it's not the normal rhetoric you see. It's not the more, and a lot of it's the 24-hour news cycle. You know, you got to fill this stuff up. I shared on the podcast how my aunt's in-laws came through, and they just wanted to watch the news 24/7. They just put on the news 24/7. Now, I don't have cable, so originally I put on CNN, and they were like, it's fine. And what I had done, CNN gave me 15 minutes of free CNN on the CNN app. But when it expired, I was like, well, I think we get another 15 minutes tomorrow. So I called my dad, and I got his DirecTV login, and it let me use the CNN app. And they said, do you have Fox News? And I said, yeah. So I downloaded it, and I watched it, and I thought, so here we are just switching back and forth between CNN and Fox News. And I was just sitting there going, they're not even talking about the same country. They're not talking about the same thing. You know what I'm saying? And it's different than like, oh, it's one person's perspective. Like, I saw the event happen from the north side with this obstruction in my way, but I had a clear view of this, and someone else saw it from the southeast side, and they were higher up, so they had a different perspective on the whole thing. They saw things. It's different than that. It's as though two people see something happen that's all in all not consequential. And then they just embellish to see who can make it a better story, right? Who can angle this one way or the other? So it's very interesting. I'll tell you what I'm experiencing personally here. I have never voted for a president who won the race. I've also never voted for a Democrat or a Republican in the two-party race. And I actually, in many races, have just... I think there's been some times where have I abstained? I can't remember if I've abstained. In a couple races, I've abstained from different things because I didn't want to vote, which I want to talk about that today, not voting. I think a lot of times people, now I want you to hear me on this. I'm not trying to get too political here. I'm not trying to tell you what way to vote or what way not to vote. My perspective really right now is, as an American person who is watching what happens during election cycles and things, I'd like to make the case for not voting. You might think, HW, come on, voting is our civic duty. And to that I would say, in theory it is, but in practicality, as I wish to lay out for you, actually there are many, many, many times, in fact, I would say about half of all of the votes in my life have been fairly non-consequential to the outcome. I'm going to explain how that is. See, when I was growing up in California, people always said, got to get out and vote, got to get out and vote, got to get out and vote. And so I took to this and I started voting. Now, I always voted for third-party candidates, and here's why. I voted for Ron Paul. Now, a lot of you are saying Ron Paul ran as a Republican. Well, actually, he wasn't the nominee when I voted for him. He was he was not even on the ballot, so I wrote him in. And I also voted for Gary Johnson a bunch of times. Not because I have any hope of them winning, but because as a vote in California, I have to ask myself, what makes my vote do the most? And so here's the thing. We have something called the Electoral College. And in California, it's a winner-take-all state, meaning whoever wins the most votes in California gets all 213 or something electoral votes. So I've been voting in that state for a long time. So here's what that means. I know going into the race that there's no way me voting for blue or red is going to change the outcome of the vote. This state will go blue. It will go. There is no, if I vote, I don't vote, or I vote opposite the way I want to vote, nothing will change. Like, I could switch teams. I could vote for a third. I could not vote. So I have to ask myself, okay, well then what does that mean? Should I vote? Well, in the sense of how do we value an action? Do you value an action based on the principle of doing it? Like, it's not about winning. It's about how you play the game. Well, that could be true. It could be true. There could be value in simply playing the game well, in simply showing up and voting as some sort of a civic duty. But I have to ask myself this. Okay, if the person I want to win will win anyway, or the person I want to win will lose anyway, then what's the point in voting? And so I have adopted this idea of it's actually not important if I personally vote. It's important that people largely vote. So, okay, that's two different things, though. And sometimes we can fall into the idea, well, if you stop voting and everyone stops voting, well, then no one will vote. Well, that's something called, what do we call it? Idiom absurdum? Factium absurdum? I can't remember the Latin term of it. But it's when you take someone's argument and bring it to an illogical conclusion by exaggerating it. Or bringing it to, you basically make the argument sound absurd by taking it to its extreme. So for example, if I tell you it's really good to brush your teeth. Oh, brushing your teeth is so good for you. And then you say, well, listen, what if, well, you know, did you know that if you brush your teeth up to 14 times a day with extra strength toothpaste, you will break down the enamel on your teeth? And it's like, that is absurd. It's absurd because, yes, my statement can be brought to an extreme measure, and thus it is made not true. But it is absurd to suggest that that is what I'm saying. It's clearly not what I'm saying, right? It's not what I'm saying in the context of me saying it. Brushing your teeth is good for you. Nobody brushes their teeth 14 times a day with extra strength toothpaste. And if it could be true, but you're making my argument seem absurd by taking it to its extreme. That's the tactic there. And so I think the same would be true by saying, well, if you don't vote, and no one voted, then your voice isn't heard. Well, who's listening to my voice if I vote and we already know which way this election's going to go? I know that right now in Nashville, there are several city council seats that are running unopposed. There are parts of the city where one party just wins all the time. That no one, there's not even, no one from the other party, like they can't even find a guy or a gal who's willing to even put their name on a ballot and like take any amount of time to do this because they know they'll lose. So what does that mean? Does that mean people in that district don't have a voice? Well, no, they could run. They could rally behind someone. But the rallying cry is so low, no one's even answering it. So I, in that scenario, I've asked myself, well, what's the best thing to do with my vote? And here's what I said. I said, well, I kind of sometimes like some of the people that run. But a lot of times I don't like all the people who run. And sometimes I might favor one party over another party. But all in all, I find a lot of absurdity, like we see in the no tag thing. It's more than a political conundrum. It's absurd. It's a lot of absurdity to tell kids they can't play tag. So I decided a long time ago, well, here's what I'll do. If I don't like blue or red, let's just see what happens if someone else interjects in the conversation. Now, I know that Ron Paul is never going to be president of the United States. He's retired now. I know that Gary Johnson is never going to win an election. It's not going to happen. I know a lot of people who tell me, I threw away my vote on Ross Perot. And the other guy won, and I can't believe it. I'll never throw away my vote again. Well, it doesn't. But when you live in a state like California, it doesn't even matter if you vote. Then I moved to a state like that. So here's what I've been doing. I've always just given my vote to a third party. Because here's what I know. I hope that my vote is in some way just signaling that I'm unhappy. I feel that actually no one's representing me. And I hope that you'll never have a third party win a race. But what you can do is this. This is what has happened in the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom has not just a third party, but a fourth and fifth party. And these parties never really win elections. They do sometimes in small areas, but they don't win national elections. But here's what happens. One of these parties starts to get 6, 7, 8% of the support of the people. High single-digit support. It starts to approach 10%. And when you do that, one of the other two big parties looks over at you and goes, you know, we could win if we got their vote. And they start going, okay, but what are we going to do? And what happens is they go, listen, let's modify the platform to include things that are important to them. So let's make changes to the platform. Now, some of you may not actually know this, or you may know this, but when the Democrats and the Republicans in the United States get together for their caucusing and their primaries and their conventions, those are sort of leftover relics of the past, because even though they're formally voting, they already know who's going to be the nominee for their party. But there was once upon a time when that convention actually was where the party got together and they started saying, well, we want this person, we want this person. And that's where it actually was decided who's going to run for president for the different parties. And it's also where people getting together would form these like coalitions, and they would come together and they had a conversation within the party that they would say this, where do we side on different issues? Now, because of the like mass media, and I say mass media, what does that mean? I just mean now because of a 24-hour news cycle and the internet, information is going so rapidly that those conversations get had in public. They are had in public, and we know kind of parties just stay to one side or the other. And basically, if red says one thing, blue's going to say another. If blue says one thing, red is going to say another, even if it's not really important. But it used to be that actually states got together and they would say, well, hey, we're all on the blue team, or we're all on the red team here. But we think this. And another state would go, huh, well, I don't like that because of this. And they would craft a policy that might say, well, we're going to put a tariff on imported goods, but not all imported goods. We're actually going to put a tariff on these imported goods because these people really want that. We're going to put it so it protects American steel, but we're going to actually put a subsidy then on American sugar. And then there we go. Everyone, you get the sugar states saying, go team blue. Steel states, go team blue. Or go team red, whatever side we're talking about. And so what I notice is that where you have some third-party dissension, you never really get those people taking a significant amount of the vote. But what you can have, I believe, is that if enough people sort of secede from the two parties in their opinions and they begin supporting someone else, the parties must acquiesce to some of those opinions. It's an interesting idea. It's one I've supported because, and listen, I've had the luxury of supporting it. I do think there's a fundamental difference in if I were voting in Iowa or if I were voting in California. Because basically in California, it doesn't matter who I vote for. In Iowa, it actually matters who I vote for. Because you're swinging a great deal of states, or you're swinging a great deal of electoral college votes and thus maybe changing who the president is. But like I said, when I was voting in California, it really didn't matter. Now, I would always vote in the local and state things and stuff. And a lot of times, just if someone had too much of a majority, I'd just vote for the other guy. Because I don't know. Maybe I like an underdog. Also, you got to remember that depending on where you are, people are very different. Like I'm just going to point this out. A Republican in California is different than a Republican here in Tennessee. And then a Democrat in California is very different than a Democrat in Tennessee. In fact, I would even tell you the more conservative people in California are similar to the more liberal people out in Tennessee. So it's a little interesting. It's a little interesting. I'll tell you another thing, and I'm not getting on red or blue or whatever. Just things I'm noticing. So I actually, just to finish up this point, I actually don't like the jargon about get out and vote. The most important thing you can do is vote. I actually don't think, if we were in a simple democracy, that would be true, but we're not in a simple democracy. And that is actually one of the beauties of the American system. See, right now, nationwide, and again, I'm not taking any sides here, people are kind of saying this. If the Republicans hold the House and the Senate, then they'll have lots of power still. But if the House and Senate turn, if Congress turns, then we'll have more of a deadlock. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind those of you who remember from civics class or history class that the framers of the Constitution actually created this country to exist in deadlock for most of its existence. You see, it's a system in which actually nothing significant gets done unless there are huge, huge majorities. So for example, you want to change the Constitution? Dude, you don't just need a majority, you need a supermajority. You need 2/3 of the Congress. And here's the thing. You need 2/3 in the upper and the lower house. That statistically is actually harder than having 2/3 of just the entire Congress. You need it to be passed in the Senate and the Congress and in the House of Representatives. You then actually can have it challenged again by the Supreme Court. Because the Supreme Court would have to rule if you had a contradiction in the Constitution. You also have laws that are meant to be that where the judiciary, the Supreme Court, the judiciary accounts for all of the judicial system. But things that have to do with the Constitution always get called up to the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. You have a system where there's lots of, remember this word from civics class, checks and balances. I would submit to you that if you read the Federalist Papers, which were written by the Federalists, there were people called the Federalists and Anti-Federalists at the time the Constitution was framed. If you read those papers, they actually talked about, we like a government that's gridlocked. We like a government that can't just do whatever it wants. We want the government to want to do something but not be able to do it more often than it gets to do it. Because it means the only things that get changed are things that really have support. And the reason that's important is that in a democracy, a simple democracy, where we just go, all right, majority wins, you have something, a certain type of tyranny called the tyranny of the majority. Oh my God, there is an enormous deer that has been killed by a car and there are vultures all over it. There was blood and, terrible. Sort of maybe a weird omen for the day, maybe? I don't think so. but one thing I wanted to, I'm going to finish up this point here because the people who started this government and framed it and created it, they were quite anti-government. Like, they knew they needed one, but they said, we need a government, of course, but all our interactions with government have been largely negative. So negative, we just fought a war against a government. So they said, we're definitely not having a king. So they said, let's put in all this thing and let's not have a democracy like the Greeks had. No. You see, the Greeks of old, the people who sort of we attribute them as founding democracy, although some democratic institutions existed in other systems before the Greeks had democracy. But they voted by household, and not even by household, sort of by powerful household, like by patriarch. So the patriarchs each had like a symbol, like a coin or a medallion or something. And you could go and hold this thing up and they'd say, "What's your vote?" And you'd vote that way. And if someone couldn't make the vote, you'd give your symbol, your little medallion thing, you'd give it to a servant or to your brother or your son, and you'd say, "Hey, go vote for me. Go vote by proxy." Which is still a little funny that we don't have that. You know, for those of you who followed, there's recently a Supreme Court justice who was being voted on. And because they, once someone moves to have the vote, there's like a clock that starts. Once you say, "Okay, we're going to have the vote," there's this clock that starts, and they had to do the vote within 30 hours. It's kind of a weird amount of time, but it meant you have a little more than a day. So they said, "Okay, 30 hours. Sounds good." What that really does is this. I just want to tell you why it's 30 hours. It's 30 hours so that if you do it in the beginning of the day, you have that whole day to prepare and then part of the next day. That's why it's done in 30 hours. Anyway, and it's at the max 30 hours. So you can do it at the end of the day, the following day, no matter what. Anyway, long story about why it's 30 hours. But forget about that. It's not interesting. Where was I? I got distracted by that deer, and now I'm just picturing that blood that was all over it. It was really crazy. Anyway, getting back to this, I've completely lost my train of thought. Anyway, 30 hours. Okay, oh, that's what I want to vote. Today, we actually have a system of government where it would be easier than ever to vote by proxy, and yet we really don't allow Congress people to do it. So, for example, they were just voting on a Supreme Court justice, and they were going like, this one guy was like, "I'm at my daughter's wedding. We planned this. And you literally yesterday said you're going to, like, you literally, like, today said you're going to, that I need to be back there to vote. My daughter's wedding's tomorrow. I'm not coming back. I'm not going to cast the vote." And this was a race that could have come down to one vote. So in a very classy move, this gentleman was a Republican. In a very classy move, somebody from Team Blue, one of the Democrats, who was a colleague of his, said, "I will abstain from voting in honor of him not being here." So that way the vote, and he said, "I would have voted," she said, "I would have voted the opposite way he was voting, but I'll abstain so that nobody misses out. You know, the vote is still integrous. And that really is very classy. That really is very classy. But she had to do that because he couldn't vote by proxy. He can't email his vote to the Congress guy. And you might say, "Well, of course, HW, if you email votes, people could hack your email." Yeah, but this guy could have just said it on TV. He could have Twittered. He could have done everything. He could have really confirmed. Could have talked on the phone. Could have given him a secret code word. He could have logged in through an encrypted thing. You could, you know, listen. When I log in to my computer at work, I have to use two-factor authentication. Okay, I could go right now and I could sell all of my money in my 401k, my IRAs, all at the bank. I could clear out like all of, like someone at GE tomorrow, you could move $1 billion in an instant. All right, this works for banking. We don't have $1 billion theft all the time by some hacker. Okay, you could do this. Like, we could vote by proxy. Anyway, this isn't about voting by proxy, but it was a classy move. And my point was that the Greeks were able to vote by proxy. But the system of government that we employ is this sort of, it's more of a republic. It's a democratic republic where we democratically, with simple majorities, elect officials who we then are bestowing the right to legislate on our behalf, thus it being a republic. So we democratically elect people who then legislate for us. And this sort of system of government where we have appointed legislators, is the republic side of that.
why they're called Republicans and Democrats, it really doesn't have anything to do with that. It's not as though Democrats are more in favor of a democracy and Republicans are more in favor of a republic. I think they both just take terms that you find in the Constitution, much like churches are always named the same thing. The Rock, Gateway, Life Church, you know what I mean? Just generic names that they like get from somewhere. But really, the thing I wanted to point out, my last point here in this podcast, and then next time we'll get on to some guitar-related stuff. In fact, I think the Tone Junkies are coming over later tonight, so we'll get some podcast material done there. We'll get some opinions. You'll hear from some other people other than HW. I'd like to point out that there's just an amount of... I really respect candidates on both sides of the aisle when people can get together and say, we're going to run a clean race. And I really respect that. And I'm going to tell you about two races that are going on right now in Tennessee. And there are two races. One is has some national attention right now, and the other one doesn't. One is the gubernatorial race. Gubernatorial has to be the funniest word that we hear in government because it has the word goober in it. And that's a pretty childish word. Whether you're calling your friend a goober or you just enjoy the candy goober, it's hard to take anyone seriously when the word gubernatorial appears under their name. So for that reason, I already like gubernatorial races more because I think it takes the edge off. Senator sounds very serious. Congress race or congressperson race, that just sounds overly formal. Congressperson? I know that it's gender neutral, but even congressman or congresswoman just sounds too formal. How about congressor? That would be shorter. Or how about just legislator? That's too formal anyway. That's why I like the word gubernatorial. It sounds like my son made it up. Somebody go post that quote to Facebook. Gubernatorial. Sounds like my son made it up. Tag it, HW's thoughts on politics. Gubernatorial sounds like a made-up word to me. Okay, someone's going to do that. Brandon's going to do that, I know that. All right, listen, Mr. Barty, please. Last thing I want to say, yeah, this gubernatorial race, both sides, is a guy named Bill Lee, and Bill Lee is like a farmer. He's a real farmer. And he's a third-generation business owner. He owns this HVAC company that's, like, really big in Tennessee. They service, like, maybe half of the heating and air, you know, units in Middle Tennessee. So it's a big company, but it's not a big company. It's not like a publicly traded company. You just see everybody here knows Lee Company in Tennessee because guess what? We run heat in the winter because it gets cold and air conditioning in the summer, which means your system has two chances a year to break. When you switch it over back to cold or when you switch it back to hot, and they break, they do, and they always need maintenance and stuff, and you mow your lawn and the intakes get super dirty. And so you have like half of this state calling Lee Company and this guy's running. Now, he hasn't been a politician before. He's a business person, and all his stuff is like literally him standing on his farm. And I live about 30 minutes from his farm. It's a big family farm, and it's every ad is him just standing outside, basically just saying like, I'm a good guy. And I respect that. Now, then he's running against someone named Dean, I'm gonna say Dean Kane. It's not Dean Kane. It's Carl Dean. That's his name. Carl Dean. And I got to be honest, if you're voting by who is better looking, Bill Lee takes it by a long shot. I don't think either of the men are very, look like actors or, you know, have a very attractive quality. But Bill Lee just looks like a farmer. He looks like an old farmer who... he's not even old. He just looks like a farmer. He's kind of squinting a lot. That's another thing I know is all... Bill Lee's photos are all outside, so he's like squinting. Which I'm like, couldn't we have moved him inside and gotten a nice smile out of him? But then you get Carl Dean, who just has a pretty unfortunate face. You know what I mean? You ever see those guys who have an unfortunate face? And you're like, dude, I bet you're a really great dad. You know? I bet you really, like, love your kids and you probably cry at their graduations. You know what I'm saying? You know, he's like moderately portly. Which I think makes him all in all more approachable, makes him seem less hostile, kind of has a goofy smile. But what I really respect is that these two guys really haven't, they've decided to run a clean race, and they sort of each said, we're going to run a clean race here. And they have. Now, you contrast that with a race that actually has gotten a lot of national attention, and there's a Senate race going on in Tennessee, and it's Marsha Blackburn versus Phil Bredesen. Now, Phil Bredesen used to be a governor and a mayor, and if you haven't noticed, Tennessee is a red state. They're team red. But and nobody has won a statewide election in 10 years on Team Blue. Guess who the last guy to do it was? Yep, you guessed it, Phil Bredesen, former governor. He went from the governor's mansion, the gubernatorial mansion, then became the mayor of Nashville. Now he's running for Senate. Now, here's what I want to point out. Now that I laid the scene, okay, you've got like this old school politician who has been governor, now mayor, now he's running for Senate. He sort of at this point just seems to be jumping around to wherever there's a job opening. I don't have a problem with him. He seems like a nice guy. I've actually looked at his policies, and I actually think I kind of agree with him on most things. Here's the other thing. I went and looked at Marsha Blackburn, and she is like, she's a Republican, but she's, but like I said, Team Blue in the state of Tennessee is actually pretty, it's not like radical blue. And Team Red in Tennessee, it can be both. It can be really radical red or pretty normal moderate red. So what you have is actually two candidates that when I looked at their platforms, they're actually not very far apart at all. And all of the literature I'm reading basically says this Senate, they said they took three topics. They took one recent topic about the Supreme Court nominee. They took two future topics that are coming up, and they showed them and they said, look, actually, these three don't really disagree on these main three topics. They disagree on some other things and sort of the jargon they use, but they actually don't disagree on a lot of stuff. And so it's interesting. We're having this race where the two people running are very close together in terms of policy, yet they're on different parties. And yet here's what I wanted to point out. You'd think that would mean they're going to run a clean race. It's not true. They're running a pretty dirty race. They're smear, and really it's one-sided. It's this, this lady, Marsha Blackburn, is just smearing this guy, Phil Bredesen, constantly. And in Phil Bredesen's ad, it's all about him. In Marsha Blackburn's ad, it's all about how if you vote Bredesen, it's the wrong vote. And I got to tell you, I actually agree with both of them on a lot of things. The areas I disagree with them are kind of one or the other. I'm not sure which of the things I disagree on are more important. So I kind of feel like, well, I got to make some compromises no matter which way I vote. And I want to vote for one of them because it's an important election. But I'll tell you, it's turning me off. The negative smear stuff. I got this thing in my mail, and it's Phil. It's this guy, Phil Bredesen, holding out his hands at a speech, and they Photoshop money falling from the sky into his hands, and it says Phil Bredesen wants to raise your taxes, and it's not even a good Photoshop. Then there's another photo of him where it's clearly like a portrait photo, but they Photoshopped in Cory Booker standing in front of him taking a selfie, and it's like, this is two different pictures that you put together, and you're trying to associate him with Cory Booker, hoping that people who know who Cory Booker is don't like Cory Booker, and so they won't like Phil Bredesen. And I feel like it's a little messed up. And I'll tell you one reason, a lot of people are going to get, this is as political as I'm going to get, I don't vote for people I don't think are kind. Because I think kindness is a prerequisite for life. I'm getting out of my car, about to go meet my wife, and this is my last point. And this is really the main point of this and why I wanted to talk about politics, but I hope I'm not turning anyone off because I'm really just talking about, you know, just races, not how you should vote or one side or the other, just in general what I think of elections and stuff. But I just want to point out, like, being kind is not a negotiable thing. Like, I'm trying to teach my kids, like, being nice is not an option. You must do it. You must be kind to succeed. You must be kind to be happy. People who are mean are not happy. People who use other people are not happy. People who take advantage of other people are not happy. You know, my son right now is watching Tom and Huck. We just watched the movie and we've been reading the stories. And it's a little mature for him. You know, my son is 6, my other one's 3.5. And there's themes of murder There's themes of poverty. There's themes of orphanage, like orphans. Orphanage means something else, but orphans. You know, Huckleberry Finn sleeps in a barrel. He asked me why. I said, because he has no, because no one's taking care of him. He said, where are his parents? I said, Huckleberry Finn's mom is dead and his dad's a drunk. That's what the story says. So he said, what's a drunk? I said, someone who drinks too much alcohol. And when they do, they get addicted to alcohol. What's addicted? It's when people do something too much, they can't stop, and it hurts them. This is real stuff I want my son to learn at a young age, and he's learning it through this classic piece of literature. And he loves that these two kids get into trouble. You know, originally before he could remember the names, he would say, Can we read about that boy who gets into mischief? I said, yeah, Tom Sawyer, let's do it. But you know, it's funny in there. My son said this to me. He said, why did Engine Joe, if you remember the story, Engine Joe is like this bad guy who's coming after Tom and Huck, and he's trying to get him. And Engine Joe, he betrays his friend twice. He twice gets a friend and then betrays him for his own benefit. He tricks someone into helping him. First, him and Muff Potter go do a job together for this doctor. And he gets mad. He steals money from the doctor. And he blames the murder on his friend, Muff Potter. And then Tom and Huck are there, and they're able to tell the court what really happened. But then it puts their life in jeopardy. And so later, Tom and Huck witness Engine Joe hiding, and he finds a treasure map. And they witness him again when he finds the treasure. And this time, Engine Joe, they run into Engine Joe in the cave. But you know how they know Engine Joe's there? They find the other friend of Engine Joe. I forget his name, but he was with Engine Joe in the cave. They find him there, and he's dead. And Huck says Engine Joe killed him so he could have all the treasure. And my son could not understand. Listen, he could not understand this. He kept saying to me, why did Engine Joe hurt his friend? And I said, because he was selfish. He wanted all the treasure for himself. He said, but why? It's his friend. You don't hurt your friends. See, he can't even understand if someone's your friend that you would do that to them. So then he said this to me. He said, but did Engine Joe die? I said, yeah, he died in the cave by himself, alone. He said, why? He said, he died because after Tom and Huck escaped with the treasure, the little town, see, they thought Tom and Huck had gotten lost in there, and they had. So they locked the door. They put a big, heavy gate in front of the cave. But when they did that, they didn't know Engine Joe was still hiding inside. So then Tom told them, Engine Joe is still inside. So they went and looked, and when they opened the door, you know what they found? Engine Joe, right on the other side of the door. He had starved to death. He had no water in the cave. He died in the cave by himself. Because he had betrayed his friend, he had killed him in the cave and hid in the cave so he could have the treasure. But the treasure got taken from him and he ended up getting locked in the cave when the boys were rescued. And my son said this to me. He said, but if he didn't hurt his friends, he would have had someone to help him. And then when they tried to fight him, he would have had another friend to fight with him. And I said, exactly. See, we don't have friends for other people. We have friends for us. Having friends is just as much selfless. Having friends is just as much selfish as it is selfless. And you have friends by being kind. I give away a pack a month, not because it makes me money or because I really think it gets that many more eyeballs. Most of the people who download the Profile Crate packs every month are already Tone Junkie customers. Does it get some new people? Sure, I guess. I don't know. Tone Junkie has more people on its email list than Profile Crate does. So it would seem slightly counterintuitive that not even all the Tone Junkie people are taking the free profiles. Am I real? You know, it's not as though... You get what I'm saying. You just do it because it's nice. It's kind. And because it's not hard for me. I'm in the studio doing it anyway. Be kind. I'm HW. Thanks for listening.